Okay, and at this time, it gives me great pleasure to introduce someone very dear to me and someone who's known me for quite some time and quite intimately, Archie Bunker, also known as Dave Christie.
My name is Dave Christie, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank you people for having me come and share with this evening. Anytime I'm asked to do this in Alcoholics Anonymous at any level, I consider it a great privilege. You see, I am privileged to be here today. You know, my wife is fantastic today. That's one of my little babies that you saw just walking away there, by the way. And that is a guy that I no more would have talked to him than I would have to you. Or you. Or anybody. That's half of my joke to him. Prior to coming here, there's a guy in television that made millions of dollars living my life. And his name was Archie Bunker. I hated everybody. I really and truly did. I'll give you a quick synopsis on myself. I was born in Glasgow, Scotland. I know you wouldn't be able to figure that out because I've mastered this language like everything else I do so beautifully. Anyway, and I was born into an Irish Catholic family, and we have a tradition over there. If you're born as an Irish Catholic, you have one primary purpose in life, and that's to hate Protestants. You know, and I was good at that. And I was taught at that until my mother did the unforgivable thing and she got a divorce. My mom was a bit of a rebel. I don't know where I got this from, but my mom was a bit of a rebel. I'll tell you how much of a rebel she was, this Catholic woman getting a divorce. She turned around and married a Mason. You don't do that in my country. You just don't, you know. But anyway, because of that, I had to leave the Catholic school and go to this Protestant school, which I hated, and I got the shit beat out of me every day, you know, because those Protestants, when they're born, they got a primary purpose in life, and that's to hate Catholics. See, so there we were kind of, anyway, long story short, I quit school at 9 years old and went to work. I went to work in a slaughterhouse in Glasgow, Scotland. In 1950, we moved to Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. My father made the move because my mother had had it up to here. You know, and he asked for one more chance, and he did it, and he moved to Canada in 1949 and sent for us in 1950. He never drank until the day he died, by the way. You know, and that was out of love. That was out of love, you see, so it can happen other ways. Anyway, 1955, we come down to California, and on the way down here, our car broke down in the middle of the Mojave Desert, and my mother had a panic attack, and we were here for a couple of days in California, and Dad says, okay, it's time to head back, honey. She says, not me. So we stayed. That's how we got into California, and that's how we stayed. You know, anyway, that's a bit of me. I have a friend, I imagine George is still alive. His name is George Henry, and the Henrys were born and raised right across the street from us in Scotland, and then they moved to Canada, and when we went to Canada, I hooked up again with George, and he was a little bit older than I was. Then when he came to California, and we've kind of followed down here, and I got in touch with him down here in California. George is 22, I'm 18. You know, anyway, I used to use George's ID. You may not believe this, but I did not look like 22 when I was 18. You know, as a matter of fact, I have a kind of doubts as if I look at old right now. That's enough of that shit. But anyway, one of my dreams was about to be fulfilled. Keep in mind now, I'm 18. I've been working half of my life. I'm a romantic at heart. I have always wanted to go visit a romantic Latin American country. And George did that for me. He took me down to Tijuana. Jesus! This was in 1955, as I recall, and I'm in Tijuana, and I'm in this bar, and this little gal is selling, and I'm buying, and she was not selling AA literature. You know, anyway, she said, Dave, it's the way we do it down here, senor. I can't be seen walking out here with you. However, I live across the street in that hotel, right across the street in room 6, blah, blah, blah. And what you do is you give me $5 and wait a couple of minutes, and then you follow me out. You been there, huh? no hotel, no room. I don't know if it was because I'm Scottish that I get gypped out of this $5, or I was just pissed off. I don't know what it was, but I was going to find this little chick. And I went looking for her in bar to bar. And I really don't know why I was doing that, because they all looked alike. They all looked alike. Anyway, when I woke up in the Tijuana jail, and I was bruised in a few places, and my friend George was there, and he says, "Dave, I don't know if I'm going to get you out of here." And I said, "What the hell happened? Jesus Christ." He said, "You don't remember?" I said, "Oh, fuck it. The last thing I remember was getting in a bar and getting a little fight or something." Yeah, I did. I got in a little fight. I thought I saw the chick, and they called in the federales, and I'm telling them about the goddamn Alamo and how a couple of us white guys wiped the shit out of your whole Mexican army. I'd like to tell you this time, by the way, I am a green card. I'm a goddamn alien, right? Oh, shit about it. But anyway, thankful, I guess my Scottish accent kind of saved me there. Maybe they didn't understand what I was saying, and I got out that day, and I knew exactly what was wrong with me. I was out of shape. Yeah. Now I know how to take care of it, so I joined the army. You know, I get in it. Anyway, I got out of the army in 1958, and I went to work. Not in the trade that I am in, because I couldn't get into the trade that I'm in. There's a little story behind that, and I won't waste your time with it. But anyway, I conned my way into that union and got to working at my trade. I met a little gal from Glasgow, Scotland. Her name is Kathy. You know, and I fell in love with her, and she fell in love with me. You know, and God, I promised I'd give her the American dream, the house, the three kids, the white picket fence, and all that horseshit that you read about. And she believed me. And you know what? She had the right to believe me. You know why? Because I meant it. You see, I was down here sincere. I really was. I knew absolutely nothing about this disease of alcoholism, although I'd been drinking since I was this high. Never gave it a thought, because I always worked. You know, I always did the things that was right. Of course, as I got on in life, things started getting a little harder to do and worse to do. And so, you know, I forgot to ask, is there any Al-Anons here tonight? None? Oh, good, then I can lay out bullshit. Right? You don't get away with that with the Al-Anons, by the way. You know, the last time I told my wife, this is drinking, of course, last time I told my wife I was sorry, you know what she said? "You sure as shit are." Yeah, boy, did she know my number. But anyway, I continued my drinking. I remember towards the latter part of my drinking, you know, and I'm sitting in a bar, don't know where the bar was, I don't know what year it was. If you're a hillbilly fan, you might get a hint, because this guy, Merle Haggard, was singing on the jukebox about how he's proud to be an Okie from Muskogee, and they do all this good thing, and they salute the college dean and all that shit. And I said, "That's what I'm looking for." And I went to Muskogee, Oklahoma. And I've held a resentment against Merle Haggard ever since. Shit. It wasn't in Muskogee, Oklahoma, you know. I went down to Australia. It's not in Australia. Let me tell you, I went down to Australia in 1968, and have you ever been to Australia? Let me tell you what I know about it in 1968. Listen up. A 16-ounce glass of beer was 11 cents, and a shot of Jim Beam was 14 cents. You want to know any more about Australia? I suggest you go get a book at the library or something, because that's about as much as I can tell you about it. Fact of the matter is, that's as kind of much about I can tell you about my whole life. It just happened to be that way. You know, towards the latter part of my drinking, I remember I got on the job at my normal time at that time. Now I'm on business, by the way. Probably heating and air conditioning business. You know, and I got on the job at normal time, about 10 in the morning, hotter than hell. You know, they have these little Oklahoma powder rooms on the construction field. Today, they don't have them. They have little condominiums. You could live in them, these things today. You know, when I was in the trade, what it was four pieces of plywood slapped together and a goddamn piece of plywood with a skill saw hole cut in it. Not good for sitting on. You see, so you'd learn how to perch. Yes. I remember getting in that morning, and I was hot as hell, man, and I was sick. I'm down there, and I am throwing up. Now, I don't know about you guys, but sometimes when I throw up, the other end gets a little envious or something. You know? I don't know what it is. So I found myself having to come from this kneeling position to a perched position with a half twist while dropping my drawers in midair. That just, you can visualize it, poetry in motion. Boom, there he goes again. And this one, I heard this. What it was my wallet slipped from my back pocket. Now, let me tell you how sick I was. I went down after it head first. Lost my goddamn cigarettes and shit. You see, there was something very important in that wallet. Voice picture? Hell no. Driver's license? Screw it. $3. $3. That was enough to get me well. See? If you'd have told me at that time that alcohol was my problem, I'd have said, are you kidding me? That gets me well. No, I never did retrieve that wallet, by the way. Well, I tried. I got a goddamn 2x4 and put a fucking nail in it and tried to fish it out. I just kept getting, forget it. Didn't get it. But anyway, that's the way it was towards the end. You know, I remember going into those bars in the morning and I'm looking at that gilt wall. Any bar drinkers here? Yeah, you know that gilt wall they put up, that big mirror? You grin and you look like, oh, Jesus Christ. You know, I'm dying. See, had a couple of drinks, I finally get it down, and then I kind of straighten out a little bit, and then I get okay, and, oh, shit, Dave, you ain't that bad. Fuck. Hi, honey, want to dance? And here we go again. And here we go again. And that's the way it was. That's the way it was. My work started going down the tubes. Why? Because I was no longer dependable. That's why. That's why. You know, of course, once again, it was your fault. And your fault. And everybody's fault. I was sitting in a bar in Torrance, California on June the 3rd, 1972. Don't know how long I'd been drinking, but I couldn't get drunk. I could not get drunk. Sure as hell wasn't sober. But I couldn't get drunk. And just about that time I had a little, what I love to call today is a spiritual experience. You know, nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got to looking at myself and saying, you know what, Dave? The only goddamn decent thing you can do, we had three children at the time, by the way, the wife and I. Married about 15 years at the time. You know, I said, the only decent thing you can do is get the hell out of their life. You know, and I know the only way I could do that would be to end my life. You know, because I'd made these promises over and over and over. So I did just that. So a little bit of intervention, an act of God. I woke up strapped down on a gurney in Harvard General Hospital. You know, and I couldn't move. I couldn't move. My arms were strapped down, my legs, my head was strapped down, and felt like somebody's cut my goddamn throat. And I heard this guy talking. I come to find out it was a doctor with his interns, and of course he didn't see me, see, because I kept my eyes closed. I didn't want to see them either. Now this guy here, he's a chronic alcoholic, he says, he took enough amphetamines to kill an elephant. He says, we got him back this time. He'll probably do it again. And I said, Jesus Christ, man, I can't even fucking kill myself successfully. Jesus. was guilt. It was horrible. Anyway, they wheeled me into this little room, and then in walked Fritzy. Now, Fritzy is my little guardian angel, my Eskimo, whatever you want to call him. I knew nothing about AA, I knew nothing about alcoholism, and I sure as hell, if I had, I'd have known Fritzy was one of us. You know how I'd known? When you hear the questions this broad asked me. Hi, Mr. Christie, how are you doing? I just tried to kill myself, for Christ's sake. How are you doing? Guess what I said? Fine, you got it. You got it. See? Listen to the next question. What are you planning on doing today? I'm like, what planet is it brought from? You know, what am I planning on doing? Jesus Christ. I says, well, I was going to go yachting, but I might just go shoot 9 at Las Verdes, you know. She says, oh, you are a typical smartass, ain't you? Boom. This is this little nurse talking to me. She started talking to me in a way that I would almost swear she'd been talking to my wife. And I knew that probably wasn't true because the situation between my wife at the time and myself was a kind of a talking, kissing atmosphere. You know, I'd talk, she'd say, kiss my ass. Far as it went. But anyway, Fritzy says, you know, there's a place in Manhattan Beach, Dave, where people get together to talk about their problems. Not once did she mention alcohol, by the way. Not once. She says, there's a place where people get together to talk about their problems. And why don't you go down there? Sure, she wasn't welcome at home anyway, so what the shit? You know, so out of there, and I headed on down to this address she gave me, 901 Sepulveda. Anybody here from the South Bay area? And you know what I'm talking about. It's south of El Segundo, it's Manhattan Beach, you know. And I'm coming down from Harbor General Hospital, and I want to make sure I didn't go past this number, so I got off at Manchester. For you that haven't been there, by the way, that's about 5 miles up the highway, you know, and I count down the numbers. Anyway, I came down to the end of it, and I see this little sign that says, the tiki bit, and I says, that's got to be it. Where else would you send a drunk? And I pulled in, and I walked in there, and believe me, I was scared. And I walked in, and it was a bar, and the guy's cleaning the bar. And I says, hey, buddy, I says, when do the people come in and talk about their problems? He says, I think you may want to go next door. The next door was the Southwest Alano Club in Manhattan Beach. Well, let me tell you, kids, I didn't know how sick I really was physically. It took all I had to walk into that bar. I stood out on that sidewalk, and I was paralyzed. And this guy opened the door, and he came out, and this is what he says to me, and I want to say it to you newcomers. Welcome home. We've been waiting for you. That was in June the 4th, 1972. I haven't had a drink since. I would love to tell you that I haven't wanted to have a drink since, but that's horseshit. That's horseshit. But anyway, I haven't. You know, I went in there, and I'm going to tell you something. We have a little crying room down in that Alano Club. For obvious reasons, we call it a crying room. I could not stop crying. And I'm not the crying type. I'm not. You know, but I couldn't stop crying. And I don't mean for days, I mean for weeks. I couldn't stop. And I remember sitting at this noon meeting, an old Jane, old Indian gal down there with her long gray hair. I can see her sitting as much as I'm talking right now. And she was leading the meeting. She says, you want to share, son? And I says, yeah. My name is... God, that was it. Well, she did something that was about to change my life. I can see her doing it now. She just slowly pushed that chair back. And she got up and she walked over to me and she put her hand on my shoulder. And she says, you're going to be okay, son. I said, I'm sorry. I said, I can't stop crying. She said, that's okay. The more you cry, The less you gotta piss. And that's what I did. I started laughing. Yes, that's what I got. You think I'm original, for Christ's sakes? That's not an original line comes out of my mouth. Not one. I got it right here in Alcoholics Anonymous when I learned how to listen. And that is very difficult. I have to remember this when I'm speaking to people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I speak to the newcomers. Because, you see, newcomers only know what they hear. That's all. And sometimes the old-timers, whatever they call themselves, old-timers, are full of shit. And when they lay out shit, that's what the newcomer's going to get. And you know the thing about laying out shit? When you go to pass on shit, it gets a little deeper. PhDs, piled higher and deeper. Yeah, right. That's it. See, so I admit, I'm an old-school Alcoholics Anonymous. I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. I got into a place where I met people that do not call shit poo-poo. When I am acting like an asshole, they don't say, hey, you know what? God's going to take care of you. They're going to say, Dave, you're acting like an asshole. And this is what you do about it. You know, we got a great program here, by the way. We have a program that works. It works. I'm living proof of that. You're living proof of that. Anybody tell you this is Saturday night? You know what drunks do on Saturday nights? You do, don't you? Goddamn right. Want to dance again, honey? Okay, let's get it on. Shit. Rolling dice. Get it going, baby. I have never had it so good. But it didn't come easy. And the book told me it wouldn't. Simple but not easy. It says a price has to be paid. Now I hope for your sake that you find somebody that is willing to teach you that. At the risk of you not liking them. You see, the other people that I know in my life today that I just dearly love are the people that I did not like because of the way they talked to me. Did they not know who they were talking to? You bet their sweet ass they did. You know, I remember when I got my first sponsor, excuse me, simply because everybody kept saying, get a sponsor, get a sponsor. You know what the hell you were talking about. I have to go out and ask McDonald's to sponsor me into AA or something. Well, that's what I thought it meant. But anyway, neither here nor there. So anyway, I got this guy to be my sponsor because he was popular. You hear that word? He was popular. Now you're going to have a choice in Alcoholics Anonymous, by the way. You can either be honest or you can be popular. Take your choice. I hope you choose to be honest. You know, if you're honest long enough, I guarantee you will become popular. I guarantee that. If you are talking the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you're sharing your experience, strengths, and hope with each other, if you're sponsoring somebody that asks you about a situation that you haven't personally experienced, tell them so. You know what, Tommy? I haven't experienced that, son. However, I happen to know a friend in Alcoholics Anonymous who has. Why don't you give him a call? That's what we need. No, well, let me see. Let me think it out, dear. I can fix everything. How's that good? You know, you can't dazzle them with brilliance, you baffle them with bullshit. You know, and I'll tell you what, we got a lot of people in our country right now that are great bafflers. Whoo! Anyway, that's another thing. That's the thing I'm part of today, by the way. Society. I'm part of society today. I vote in everything, believe it or not. Isn't that wonderful? You bet your sweet ass. You know, what a great country this is. You know, and I love it. But anyway, Alcoholics Anonymous was that way. So I finally got a guy that, to talk about Frank, my first sponsor, Frank Priest was his name. Frank was a great guy, don't get me wrong. Frank and I were friends until the day he died. You know, but he was not for me. Frank was the type of guy that would say, it'll pass. God isn't going to give you any more than you can handle. This is wonderful and true, but that's not what I needed. I needed an answer. I got a problem, kid. I want an answer for it. So finally, I asked this guy that I just kind of detested if he would be my sponsor. His name was Tom Hardy. Tom's in heaven now. There's a lot of people out that I knew. But let me tell you the kind of guy Tom was. Have you ever done anything... Have you ever done anything so silly you feel like kind of an asshole about it? Have you ever done that? No? Liars. Let me tell you what happened. I had this, I was putting in this sprinkling system. My friend Jack is a plumber. He'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And I have these little reverse flow goddamn valves that you put on it to keep the water from going back into your main system. And I glued them all on backwards. Yeah, I put them all on backwards, six of them. I come into the club and I said, God, I feel like such an asshole. And this guy, Tom Hardy, looked at me and said, well, most assholes do. Whoa, what are you talking about? Let me tell you, my early sobriety in Manhattan Beach, it was, I know you people are get kind of tender ears for foul language, but they use a little foul language down there. Called human talk. But anyway, that was it. I come away, I thought Manhattan Beach, I thought that was AA, by the way. I live in Torrance, 15 miles away. And I'm driving back and forth, Torrance and Manhattan Beach, Torrance. This is before I knew there was other places in AA. I remember talking to old Joe one day. I said, oh, Jesus Christ, Joe, every time I drive home, I said, they're building a new liquor store. Now, I don't know why that bothered me, because I'm not a liquor store drinker. I'm a bar drinker. But it bothered me. He said, well, I go a different direction. I says, I do. I go this way, I go that way, I come down the middle. I always grab new. He said, well, Dave, you know, when you learn how to read the message, does anybody know the message of liquor? Do you, honey? How do you spell liquor?
Seriously?
L-I-Q-U-O-R. Lucky I quit, you old rummy. How about that shit? Let me tell you, I'm a little over 38 years sober. I drive by a liquor store, come down. I said, well, lucky I quit, you old rummy. I'm going to talk to a bunch of people that are lucky they quit, right? You old rummies? That's your sweet ass. But anyway, that was Tom. But I'm up there, and I moved to Torrance now. And I'm standing from the podium, and I'm talking about what a great liar and cheat and thief I am because I'm an alcoholic. See, the better I was at lying, cheating, and stealing just proved how much a better alcoholic I was, right? So after that little pitch that day in the meeting, Tom said, you know, I'd like to have a little talk with you, Dave. And I went, all right. Boy, did I sure have. I'm finally going to get a little pat in the back, right? Great pitch. Great pitch. He says, you know, the reason you steal is because you're a fucking thief. And the reason you don't tell the truth, God's a liar. Now, the reason you cheat is because you're probably an immoral son of a bitch. Besides that, you may be an alcoholic. Besides that, Jesus Christ. Little bit of news. Don't get your character defects mixed up with your disease. That's a dangerous piece of territory. You're going to sit in these meetings and you're going to hear such horseshit lines, you're going to go, pfft. Well, you know, I don't think I'm going to keep this job because I really don't think God wants me to have this job. I don't think God cares whether you polish gold or shovel shit. As long as it's honest. But the reason I think like that is because I'm an alcoholic. No, not at all. Sorry, honey. The reason you think that is probably because you're a lazy bitch, you know, but anyway, what the fuck? God, imagine talking to people like this. And being loved because of it. Yes, I remember telling my sponsor one day, do you know who you're talking to? I know exactly who I'm talking to. So you want to hang around a while, I'll introduce you to the asshole. Ooh, whoa, that's terrible. But anyway, this is it. So I got with Tom and I asked him to be my sponsor. I'll never forget it. This little baby of mine will tell you if this is true or not. He's met a couple of these guys I get sober with. He says, you want me to be, are you sure? I said, I'm positive. It's good, something I want to show you. He walked out in the parking lot towards his car. And I know I'm going to get a medal or something. Probably from the main office. And we got to Tom's car, and he opened the door, and he went in his glove compartment, and he took a gun out, and he put it in my face. He says, if you ever take another drink, I'm going to blow your fucking head off. True? That was a little over 38 years ago. I haven't had a drink since. I don't know if he'd have really done it. I really don't. I'm sure he wouldn't have. However, I sure as hell wasn't going to test it. Anyway, Tom got with me and got me directly into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. He started telling me things that I had absolutely no idea about. You know, and how easy it is to let this program slip away from you. Believe me, things have changed over 38 years. Some for the better, some not so better. You know, I remember when I was early in Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know anything about it. You see, which is why I'm not hard with people prolessly when they come into Alcoholics Anonymous and they're brand new. Because I had a gambling problem. You know, and I don't know if I lost so much money gambling because I was drunk or I got drunk because I lost so much money gambling. I remember sitting in a meeting in Manhattan Beach and I'm talking about my gambling problem. This guy said, hey, this Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't give a shit about your gambling problem. Oh, man, I got hurt, man. You little funny goddamn tobacco puffers get hurt on that kind of shit too, I know. Yeah. Anyway, this guy came after me and says, I'll take you to another meeting tonight. I don't want to go to your goddamn meeting. Sorry about bitch, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he took me to a GA meeting. Anybody know what that is? Hell, you have them right here. Shit. And I'm telling him about how I'm a compulsive gambler and I also have a problem with alcohol because I'm an alcoholic. This guy said, we don't give a shit about you being an alcoholic. We don't have enough goddamn money to become alcoholics. Right on. Singleness of purpose. Singleness of purpose, very, very important. I'm going to tell you something. I've been around Alcoholics Anonymous long enough that I have talked with everybody that's had every kind of problem going. Believe me. I've worked with a lot of drunks. I've been to a meeting every day since the day I got sober. You know, I had the privilege of starting Alcoholics Anonymous program, not Alcoholics Anonymous, but the Alcoholics Anonymous program in the California Youth Authority in 1976. I had the privilege of being one of the ones that started it in Terminal Island, in San Pedro, in Federal Penitentiary. I had the privilege of starting it at Torrance Psychiatric Hospital for the loonies. No brag, just fact. I started a 12-step house in San Pedro, the Beacon House. Still going. Once again, no brag, just fact. I was active. I loved it so. And I still, to this day, love it so. Is AA worth defending? You bet your sweet ass it is. You bet your ass. I don't want to hear my grandchildren saying something like, hey, Dad, you know, Granddad, when you had a problem, they used to have a thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. Whatever happened to it? What did happen to it? Maybe we didn't listen to the traditions. The steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are 12 steps, spiritual in nature, that are practiced as a way of life, will ensure that you will become happy and usefully whole. That's the steps. The traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous If you have a sponsor that's telling you those traditions are for you individually, shit can them.
Oh, I'm going to hear from some sponsors about this shit.
No, but anyway, that's okay. The traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous are to protect Alcoholics Anonymous from the members of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I don't know when this chanting started, but I go to some meetings now and I hear chanting.
Principles before personalities.
I want to ask a question right now, and you might think about it while I'm talking a little bit. What is that referring to? What does that mean, principles before personalities? Like I said, the newcomer is only going to know what this old timer is going to tell him. And if he doesn't tell him, he's going to figure out what it meant. I did that. I did that in my life. I figured out what things meant. And what happened because of it? Well, what happened because of it, on June the 3rd of 1972, I was strapped down in a goddamn gurney in Harbor General Hospital because I just tried to kill myself. Because I was going along figuring out things the way I thought it should be. Any of you ever heard of Dick Van Dyke? You know who he is, right? This is breaking no anonymity, by the way. This is public record. Dick Van Dyke, he used to be on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Great show, funny guy, Mary Poppins, the whole bit. Got into drinking. Dick was alcoholic. His career went down the tubes. Fortunately, he got into Alcoholics Anonymous. Unfortunately, he evidently did not have a sponsor that was familiar with our traditions. So what happens with Dick Van Dyke, sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, business going good again? He's on the Barbara Walters Show, or one of them other gossip mongers on television. And Dick is bragging about how he went down the tubes with alcohol. But he found Alcoholics Anonymous. And he has become successful again, and it's wonderful. What's that got to do with us? Well, let me tell you what that's got to do with us. Here I am at home, and this poor wife of mine is trying to get my ass sober and can't do it. And says, Dave, look at this. Look at Dick Van Dyke here, big star. He went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and just listen to him, it's wonderful. And of course that slaps what? A little more guilt on me. Until, true story, 3 weeks later, Dick Van Dyke, 502. See? Then I could go to my wife and say, see? There's your goddamn Alcoholics Anonymous for you. See, so what happened was, when he put his personality before the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what that means, by the way, principles before personalities. It doesn't mean that I have to like you even though you're an asshole. It's got nothing to do with that. Nothing. Good to know about these once in a while. We've got a great thing going for you here. Get into these traditions. Find out how they came about. You know, those traditions weren't right in with Alcoholics Anonymous right off the bat. They got voted in the 1950s. And there was a big fight about it. You see, because there was a little guy called Raleigh Hansley. He was a baseball player, professional baseball player. And he went down the tubes. And he got into what was not at the time Alcoholics Anonymous, by the way. But he got into it and he got sober. And started talking about it, how wonderful it was. And even when it became Alcoholics Anonymous, he's talking about how wonderful it was. And everybody thought it was wonderful. He says, man, this is an accepted thing. This Alcoholics Anonymous, this is a great thing. So this gal that ran a little insurance business wanted to start passing out flyers. If you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll get 10% off. Right, that's tradition six, by the way, in case you're wondering what I'm talking about there. This is when they had to have traditions. You know, a little over 100 years ago, or even longer, there was a group called the Washingtonians. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but the Washingtonians were over 100,000 sober members. You know, back in the 1700s, 100,000 was a lot of people. You know, they were very successful. And Alcoholics Anonymous took a lot of lessons from them, but they went down the tubes. Why? They had no traditions. Singleness of purpose meant nothing. It became favoritism type shit. It went away, see? Not so with us. So be careful with that. See? So if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, or fairly new, now you know that principles before personalities doesn't mean that you have to like me regardless of anything. It's got nothing to do with you personally, nor me personally. It's at the level of press, radio, and films. That's why I tell you right now, my name's Dave Christie. That's Christ, I-E. C-H-R-I-S-T-I-E. You see me walking down the street and you're with your granny, say, hey, granny, see that guy over there? That guy named Dave Christie. He's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You do that? Sure. Absolutely. Go ahead. You come up to me and ask me, I'll say, absolutely I am. Unless you have a little KCOY TV with you or some shit like that. Is that not what it says? At the level of press, radio, and films. The press here? But even if they are, it was read prior to the meeting about our anonymity. And please do not display it at the level of press, radio, or films. See? So that's where that one is on. But anyway, here it is into me with this, a bit with me. I have to learn things at home. So I am coming home to this wife, married 15 years, and I'm sober, I don't know how long. Who cares, 3 months, 5 months, 6 months, doesn't make any difference. You know, and she says, you know, I'm glad you found something that looks like it may work for you, however, I'm going to go through with a divorce. Shit, I didn't even know she'd filed for one. You know, we pay attention to these important things that's happening in our life, you know. Well, I'd been in AA long enough, I said, you know what, honey, I really don't want a divorce, I says, but if that's what you want, I don't blame you. Go for it. 2 days from now, Monday, we're going to be celebrating our 52nd wedding anniversary. Directly because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Directly because of Alcoholics Anonymous and the people therein. The people that were honest with me. The people that told me things. I remember walking up to Tom one time when I was about a year sober. Hadn't said anything. Hadn't said anything. I'm just walking up to him and he says, about the wife, ain't it? How do you know? She called you? So let me tell you something. Never met your wife, never talked to your wife, but I'm on her side. that's what I had. Yeah, yeah. Where'd you go from here? Jesus Christ. See, but this is what it was and the directions I need. I remember being sober for a while and I asked a question that a lot of married people answer. Why do they stay with us? Why do they stay with us? You know, and I remember the old guy in the meeting saying, well, it's because they're sicker than we are. I thought, that's pretty good, come to think of it. I sure shit wouldn't stay with me. You know, and at home I told my wife about this. I'll never forget what she says. She says, Dave, God, I feel sorry for that guy. And I said, really? Why? She says, evidently, he never had anybody who really loved him. Yep. Yep. I almost lost that gal to guys. You want to know the guys I'm talking about? Jim Beam, Johnny Walker, Adolph Coors, and that Latin Jose Suero. I am so blessed being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just love you, so I'm very serious about this. I'm telling you, when you get a sponsor, I hope you have a sponsor that doesn't have all the answers. But when he does have the answers, directly tell them to you, whether you want to hear it or not. You know, because we know what you got to hear. We know what you got to hear. How do I know? I've got 38 years on the job training, for Christ's sakes. That's how I know. What do I have at home now? You notice the words I said, home, not house? I used to have a house. Today I have a home. Big difference. My children today think their old man's okay. You know, my oldest son, he's 51 years old. Tom's had the privilege of meeting him, and he's still a fuck up. Sorry. Sorry. True story. David cannot get sober. See, David has that thing that all of us suffer from. Most of us, we get over it because we're here. Some of us don't. And what is that that David has got? A victim mentality. It's everybody's fault. I thank God every day I wake up that I had three children. We had David, and then we had the twins. Had we not had those other two, the twins, who are normal kids, they're normal boys. They do things like boys do. You know, normal things like throwing pipe bombs in a goddamn swimming pool at that school. You know, that's normal. Yeah, things like that. Yeah, kicking the shit out of the neighbor's dog. You know, things like that. That's normal. See? But neither one of them are alcoholic. And what did that point out to me? This wonderful thing, you'll heal it in here. Well, the reason I'm an alcoholic is because I come from an alcoholic family. Bullshit. The reason you're an alcoholic is because you're a fucking alcoholic. You were born with it. You were born with it. Think of when you were a little child. I can remember when I was a kid. And I'm running around with a couple of my buddies. We ran around in threes, I don't know why, but we did. Something would come up that would require two people. Guess who I thought they were going to ask? The other two. Right? You identify with that? Sure. That was long before I drank. Long before. And a lot of these little things happened. See? It's amazing. It's amazing. So you're born with it. I remember asking Tom, my sponsor, I wonder how come we're alcoholics. He says, who gives a shit? Isn't that a great answer? Who gives a shit? You are. So what? Big deal. Forget it. Work it. So we have the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous that we can go through. You know, if I, in the next hour that I'll be talking here, I'm going to go through the steps with you. It really takes that long. I want to tell you one thing about the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of those of you that are afraid of them, they're loving, and they're gentle, and they're protective. There are other people. The steps of Alcoholics Anonymous will not allow me to tell you something that may hurt you. Even if it's true, by the way. I can't do that. You see, I can't hurt you to ease my conscience. Can't do it. Hate to tell you this, Henry, but while you were out of town last weekend, your wife and I, you know. I'm joking here, by the way. I goddamn it, didn't come up and take my scalp. I'm just getting your hand back. But if it was true, I couldn't tell you about it. So does that mean that there's some amends that I can never make? No, not at all. Not at all. Remember that little thing that you say sometimes, we don't chant it, but it's at the end, it says, God could and would have sought. God could and would have sought. What does that mean? These things that I can't tell you about because it may hurt you, I can tell God about it. And I have told God about it. I've told him I'm sincere about it. And I won't do it again. and he believed me. And he'll take care of it. That great? That's great. Now, don't use that too much for avoiding things that you should be telling that you're going to get your ass chewed out about. But little things like that, you see. So this is what you need. You need somebody that knows the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I ask, Dave, how do you ask for a sponsor? Here's what you ask a sponsor right off the get-go. Have you done the steps? Well, almost. Oh, well, you're almost ready to be a sponsor. Right? You're almost ready to be a sponsor. As having had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics. Practice these principles in all other affairs. All of them. You see. So this is what we look for. If you have a problem, sponsor's out of town, big deal. Big deal. Go ask somebody else in the program. I've got a problem. They'll talk to you. They really will. See? Learn how to talk to the old timers. Don't talk about them. There's a lot of people that talk about Dave Christie. Some of you may have heard, I am a real prick. Those people haven't even met me yet. You see? So don't do that. Don't judge other people by what people tell you what they're like. Find out for yourself. Find out for yourself. You'll find that most guys are okay. You know, and be more than happy to sit down and talk with you. I am, at any time, for any reason. God, the time flew by so fast. I want to close this up by a little line that I heard that I just absolutely love because I identified with it so. It's about the guy who is a drunk. And he's a family member, and he's got a kid, and he's in the morning, and he's got a hangover that's killing him, and his little 10-year-old kid wants to play with him. And he wants to play with him, but he's so hungover. He's sick. He said, okay, son, just a minute. And the guy's a salesman. He's out to his car, and he brings in his sheet, and it's got a picture of the world on it. And he tears it up in 100 pieces, and he throws it in the ground, and tells his son, okay, son, he says, you put that world back together, and we'll play the rest of the day, yeah. we slick. About a half an hour later, the kid comes and he says, there it is, Dad. And, Jesus, God, you put that world together? How did you do that? He said, well, Dad, I have to be honest with you, I cheated. He said, what do you mean you cheated? The world's together. How did you do this? Well, Dad, that world was so tore up, I just couldn't do anything with it. I went out and I got another one of your signs, and I turned it over. On the other side was a picture of a man. He said, and I just put the man back together, and the world took care of itself. And that's what you've done to this man. And I thank you.